Want access to search and listen to the entire webmasterradio.fm archive of over 1,500 podcasts commercial-free? Just become a webmasterradio.fm elite member for less than 99 cents a day. Otherwise, the last 60 days of content are on the house. Webmasterradio.fm. We're everywhere.
Need help improving your PPC campaigns? Tired of spending all your time swamped with spreadsheets and manual updates? Turn to Adapt SEM software to optimize your campaigns and to reach your goals. Adapt SEM is one of the most affordable and reliable tools on the market for improving PPC campaigns. Adapt SEM not only optimizes your bids, but also gives you keyword suggestions, competitive research, and helps to test ads, all in one place at flat rate pricing and no long-term commitments. Learn how Adapt SEM can help manage your PPC campaigns better. Check out our free webinar at adapt.com/webmasterradio. Sign up now for a free personal tour. adapt.com/webmasterradio.
Feeling better? Looking better? Making life better. It's Life Tips. We'll explore the latest innovations, introduce you to the latest products, and bring you the tips from experts and environmental pioneers to help you lead a better life. Life Tips. Making your life smarter, better, faster, wiser. Welcome your hosts, Byron White and Amanda Smith.
Hey everybody, we are back this week, and sadly we are without Byron. He's away at a trade show, but working hard and busy, and he will be back with us next week. So until then, joining us will be Alan Fortescue from the Earthwatch Institute. He's got some really cool ideas on the environment and changing economy and what he's calling Obama's golden opportunity. So we're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, I'm sure he's got a lot of really cool stuff to tell us.
Life Tips will be right back after this short break.
Hey, what are you reading?
Revenue Magazine. It keeps me up to date on everything in performance marketing.
Yeah, I get all my information online.
I don't see a computer next to your boogie board there.
Well, I've got a regular magazine here.
Revenue Magazine is the only hard copy magazine that covers affiliate marketing techniques, search technologies, online fraud prevention, and interactive advertising, branding, and marketing.
My magazine's got pictures.
Revenue Magazine has everything for online marketers, affiliates, merchants, agencies, and networks. And you can read previous issues, blogs, and more at RevenueToday.com.
Mine's got a centerfold.
Revenue Magazine, the performance marketing standard. For more information, go to RevenueToday.com.
Are your domains working hard enough for you? Now, park your portfolio at RevenueDirect.com to maximize your earnings on traffic. With Revenue Direct's proven domain monetization service, you'll experience better payouts, more options, and smart optimization. Sign up free now at RevenueDirect.com. It's that easy. Revenue Direct. Make more money. Period.
And now, back to Life Tips. Making your life smarter, better, faster, and wiser. Here are your hosts.
Hey everyone, we're back, and we're joined today by Alan Fortescue, the Director of Education for the Earthwatch Institute. Alan, are you here?
I am.
Hi, thanks so much for joining us today.
You're welcome.
Now, tell us a little bit more about the Earthwatch Institute for listeners who might not be familiar with it.
I will jump into telling you about Earthwatch, but I just want to clarify something just straight off the bat, that when I talk about Earthwatch, I'm definitely talking about Earthwatch, but I know you also were talking to me about some of my views about the Obama campaign and the Obama administration. When I jump into that part, I'll be talking about ideas that are my own. But jumping into the Earthwatch Institute, we are the world's largest environmental volunteer nonprofit, which means we coordinate people from all over the world to participate on ongoing scientific research projects, actually assisting scientists in the field with their research and undergoing an educational program while they're doing that.
Really? And specifically, what sort of scientific research do your volunteers help with?
Well, currently we have about 130 projects in 40 different countries around the world, and our projects are organized around four key areas. which have to do with climate change, the health and the maintenance of oceans and the natural resources that we get out of the oceans, as well as land resources and the management of natural resources on land and sustainable cultures. So our volunteers and our scientists engage in work anywhere looking at indicator species, large mammals, and how well they're doing in their given ecosystems, or looking at larger issues like sort of whole ecosystems and how well they're functioning given issues like climate change and or human impacts.
So how do you recruit your volunteers?
Well, it's through a lot of different sources. We have a lot of different kinds of opportunities for volunteers. We have funded opportunities. We work closely with a lot of different corporations that are interested in making substantial changes to who and what they are as they think down the line about the environment and the types of challenges they'll face as organizations. And so a lot of corporations will actually come to us and want to become involved with the research and get some of their corporate leadership out into the research in the field to talk with scientists, educators, and others working on big issues like climate change and trying to understand how that will impact their bottom line as well as impact the health of the environment. So we also have opportunities for teachers, fellowships that are sponsored through foundations and others that bring K through 12 teachers out into the field where they can learn about, you know, again, important issues related to some global challenges and bring those issues back to their classrooms. And then we also just have volunteers, people like yourself or, you know, anybody from any walks of life who can dial into our website or look at one of our catalogs which is sent out and find something that is of interest to them and just call us up and we can help them participate in that way.
Now, tell me a little bit more about your background as Director of Education. How did you get involved with Earthwatch and, you know, as Director of Education, who are you educating specifically?
I got involved with this, you know, at some point in my life. I decided, I mean, I've always been concerned with the state of the planet, and I think, as you know, we're moving in a direction where a lot of issues which seem to feel like they were in the hinterlands are becoming more and more critical as days go by. And at some point, I decided that I was going to get involved instead of being a spectator. And so I went to school and sort of refocused myself and pursued specifically the idea of how you engage people on these difficult issues and create behavior change. So getting my doctorate was sort of the first step in getting involved with Earthwatch, but I particularly was interested in working for Earthwatch because moving people who, creating behavior change in individuals is very difficult to do, and I think it requires sort of a complex of different experiences, getting them out of their comfort zones, getting them involved with real work that impacts real people and has impact on the world, and tailoring that with a specific educational program. And Earthwatch is able to do all of that by taking people literally out of their situation somewhere else in the world or somewhere else in the country, meeting different people, involving them with things that they haven't done before, and connecting them with people who are working on really important issues and giving them sort of that insider view. So I thought it was a really important and unique way of creating change.
Now, I always bring up environmentalism as a hot button topic, which really isn't the case. I mean, it's been talked about for decades, but I feel like within the past 10 years, it's really become specifically a hot button topic, and it's something that people are talking about a lot more. But with that rise in environmentalism as a hot topic, have you seen an increase in volunteerism, a decrease, about the same?
I think it's remained about the same. I think where we have seen an increase in particular, again, is with corporations who are seeing that change has to be made and are really trying to ask themselves the difficult questions of what are those changes really, how can we better understand them, and how do we sort of find a way of integrating them into what we do. So I think, you know, as a sector, that's probably the largest increase in what we've seen as volunteers who get involved with what we do.
Mm-hmm. Now, switching topics on you a little bit, I found this fantastic article of yours on Tree Hugger. Anyone who listens to the show knows that I love the Tree Hugger website. There's, you know, it's like the New York Times of environmental education. So tell us a little bit more about your golden opportunity for Obama.
Well, it really sort of, I mean, it actually could be related to the question you asked before regarding how many people seem to be getting involved or not getting involved in environmental issues. There's the general sense, and if you look at national surveys on environmental concerns, you know, by a wide margin, people are concerned with what's going on in the natural world, though they may not fully understand it, and they may not really fully understand how to become involved with it. But, I think you don't have to be living too far under a rock to know that there's something going on, and there's a lot of issues that we all really need to be paying attention to. And I'm totally blanking hold on a second.
Well, tell me more about your plan for how he intends to use the $700 billion bailout that he's coming up with.
Right. So I guess to tie it back in, I think in getting people involved, whether people are sort of moving in that direction or not, the reality remains that there are significant challenges that are not going to go away and are only going to get worse. And if we don't take action now and actually find ways of sort of restructuring our society, we're going to be in for a very rocky ride in the next 20, 30 years. And so we seem to be approaching a moment for a substantial change socially. I mean, we've got a lot of problems that we hear every day about, such as the financial meltdown. But we also have a significant opportunity for change. We have a new administration coming into office who appears to be all about creating change and thinking about change that's on the long term, not on the short term. Mm-hmm. And, I was reading an article that said Obama is creating a new sort of $700 billion stimulus plan that's different than the plan that's already been put into play by the Bush administration to bail out the banks. And it's not explicitly clear what this plan entails, though there's some suggestion that the plan will involve sort of a bailout, if you will, of social services, states, rebuilding infrastructure. And in recent weeks, we've heard that he's interested in rebuilding the highway system and other such projects, perhaps creating some middle-class tax breaks to help give cash back to the middle class and help stimulate the economy through consumerism. All of which sound very safe, but I think there's also a huge opportunity here, given sort of the perfect storm, if you will, of these major environmental challenges that we're facing globally, with sort of the internal economic and social challenges we're facing, to turn the ship around and create substantial structural change. And this is something a lot of people have been talking about, but I think Al Gore in particular has set a challenge for the next 10 years to fundamentally restructure the way that we do everything. One of the ways that everyone is pointing to that we can do that is actually to end our use of carbon, end our use of fossil fuels by way of significantly reducing our carbon footprint, our global impact on the world through carbon emissions, and transforming ourselves into a leader of renewable energies. So my idea was, instead of spending the $700 billion solely on sort of a refurbishment of old infrastructures, was to actually use that money to transform our economy and our infrastructure into a renewable energy economy and infrastructure. Meaning, rather than just sort of saying, well, it's too expensive to put into place wind towers, or is it too expensive to put into solar panels, or if we just had an economy that was better able to produce these things, but there's sort of a production bottleneck, actually use this money as a cash infusion to stimulate a massive, widespread installation of wind technology and solar technology. And I'm not sure if you're aware, but, you know, wind technology alone, there was a study done in 1991 by the U.S. Department of Energy, which showed the three states of Kansas, North Dakota, and Texas by themselves had enough wind potential energy to supply the entire power for the United States if we were but to build the wind farms to capture that energy and then build the infrastructure that could channel that energy around the country. So there seems to be a huge opportunity to fundamentally transform our physical infrastructure as well as our economy, as well as our global environmental footprint, but seems to be, you know, sometimes the will lacking in doing that. So I wanted to throw the idea out there in case anyone was listening from the Obama administration that now is the time, and this cash infusion could go quite a long ways in making that happen.
Now, just out of curiosity, where are we coming up with this $700 billion?
Well,
does anyone know exactly where all this money is coming from and why we have the plan in place that we do?
That's an excellent question. It's coming from the same place that the other $700 billion came from, which was, borrowing it from China or Saudi Arabia and then spending it on whatever we want to spend it on. Now, if you want to spend it on sort of bailing out the system that got us into a financial mess in the first place, that's one way of doing it. But we could actually use it as an opportunity to spend it on ourselves and build a system that instead of just sort of, 10, 20, 30 years down the line, keeping us where we are now, will fundamentally change who we are and how we think about the way we interact with the world. But the money, it could come from taxes, but it, in the short run, they're going to be borrowing it from other places. They're going to borrow it regardless of what we do with it.
What are the major expenses with the high?
But it seems that we should find a way of using it intelligently as opposed to just simply sort of pouring it back into a tired system.
Right. I completely support that. What does the high cost of the energy subsidies stem from? Is it production of these awesome wind towers? Is it, installing the solar panels? Is it maintenance? What does the cost come from?
Well, I think the initial cost would be in production. And there's sort of an estimate that an annual cost for production of enough wind energy as we come up to scale over, say, the next 5 or 10 years would be in the range of about $300 billion per year. So there's quite a substantial monetary value assigned to what would be needed in production. However, that some may seem large, but it's actually, ironically enough, the same amount of money that we subsidize globally oil industries in different ways. So if we were to stop subsidizing the production and transportation of oil and actually invest it in wind power, we could have a neat exchange of funds there. And also the $300 billion per year over the next, say, 5 to 10 years is also small in comparison to the $1 trillion that's spent a year in oil exploration and producing the oil that we bring over here and use, which goes to degrade the world instead of making it a better place.
Now, here's an interesting question. I know that there's a lot of big energy companies who are vying for the chance to get on board with these big money opportunities. How can we tell as consumers which companies are more reliable than others, which may help us out in the long run? I mean, there's a ton of wind power companies out there. How do we know who's good and who's not?
Well, that's another good question, but I think I have a different answer for you. I think what we should actually be doing, and again, this is one of the sort of interesting synergies of this moment of time, and one of the other big things that we see in the news today is what's happening with the auto industry and sort of the potential downfall of the biggest three automakers in this country and sort of them scrambling to redefine who they are and, what kind of cars they make. And, hopefully they will find their footing and continue to make cars, albeit hopefully more green cars. But I think there's a neat opportunity because in order to go up to the scale that we would need to go up to capture enough wind power to, essentially power the United States solely through wind, if we were just to go that avenue, the production bottleneck is severe in the sense that there's a lot more people who would like to have these towers in place, but there's not enough infrastructure to actually produce enough towers to meet the needs. And there's not enough sort of cash influx for people to build more facilities to build these towers because, they can't get enough of them sold to people who want them to bring the revenue back in to, sort of increase production. So, again, there's this sort of crazy bottleneck going on. And, again, this is where some of that $700 billion could come in. Instead of incentivizing the big three auto industries just to go back and either do business as usual or make cars, we could actually re-outfit them to produce wind towers. And if you were to compare this to, what the United States did in 4 years during World War II, going from having no infrastructure to build things like tanks and warships and airplanes to, within just a couple of years, going into mass production of these things enough to win a war, we certainly could go into mass productions very quickly with a minor retooling in the auto industry infrastructure to produce these kind of wind towers and make them available to all of those who would want them, make them available to states like North Dakota or Texas or Kansas or other sort of Midwestern states that have a lot of wind power, and enable them to build a new green economy. Something else, actually, sort of a side note in tandem with that, in sort of an interesting national project, and we hear about with the economic downturn, all these loss of jobs, this would create a huge amount of job potential for people who are either in the auto industry and who have lost their jobs, get a little retraining, and be able to make wind towers. But it also creates other potential to create a new kind of infrastructure that would be required to connect state to state with cables that would channel this power appropriately to cities and towns who could then use it. So there's a whole switch in potential change and creation of a new job market as well.
That's awesome. I think your golden opportunity plan is certainly something that, you know, let's get Barack on the horn.
Let's do that.
Plan.
I'll dial in for that next conversation.
What's his phone number? Somebody's got
it. Yeah,
I
don't know. It's keeping it secret, I think.
Now that you've got me thinking about wind power, and this is coming from someone who knows absolutely nothing about wind power, I mean, do they specifically put wind towers down in Hurricane Alley? Do we get more energy from a good hurricane than we do from, say, putting towers along the coast of Massachusetts? I wonder. Is this something I'm going to have to look
at? Well, I mean, certainly the more wind power you have, the more energy you're going to generate. I think a hurricane might be more wind power than might be good for your average wind tower. But, you know, with increases in technology, you don't necessarily have to put it in the most windy areas. The study I mentioned earlier that was done in 1991, it was done almost 20 years ago, and since that time, the technology has improved to the point where wind towers are 20 times more efficient. And they're also able to go up higher. Instead of about 40 meters, they go up to about 100 meters into the air and are therefore able to have a more constant, stronger stream of air passing through them and generate energy, but they can also generate energy at lower speeds. So it's not necessary to put them in the windiest areas that you can imagine. But you bring up another important point as well. It's that these don't also have to be land-based. They can be sea-based. There's projects underfoot to put in wind towers as far as 50 miles out to sea, so they're not sort of disturbing the view of the people who live on the coast, but they're able to generate, you know, substantial amounts of energy out to sea as well. And I know I've been saying a lot about wind power, but it doesn't necessarily have to be solely wind power, though it's certainly one of the most highly productive, efficient, scalable technologies out there. There's quite significant advancements being made on solar energy as well. And sort of as a tandem, you know, you could have some wind power input. You could also increase your solar power capacity and infrastructure, and as well as some geothermal. And there's some other technologies that's being developed so that you have a multi-purpose effect that would, again, create more jobs in different sectors, as well as solve the energy crisis. And ideally, you know, you put this into place with all of these different technologies over the next 5 to 10 years, and we can completely eliminate our use of carbon-burning fuels in the nation. Obviously, cars would still be using them, and there would be a lot of retrofitting that would happen or need to happen as well for houses or businesses who might be running off of coal and or oil-powered systems. But again, that's another opportunity. That's another business that individuals could get into through this opportunity.
I think you've touched on two really fantastic points here. The first being that converting to these alternative energies is certainly going to boost the economy, boost the job market, and in an industry where we are dying for new jobs, that would certainly, you know, help alleviate some of the pressure in the job sector. The other being that I think the automotive bailout specifically should have had that stipulation, like, we will bail you guys out, but you're going to have to make some very serious changes to the way cars are produced and looking into converting to more hybrids and increasing sales of you know, solar-paneled cars, things of that nature. We certainly could have taken more steps to push the environmental movement along with said bailout.
No, and I think you're right, and I think that's a good observation, and I think, you know, that's why what you and I do is really important, is that, you know, from outside the system, there are voices who are thinking differently, thinking creatively, and willing to take action. You know, it's sort of interesting. I was having a conversation with a colleague the other day and talking about similar kinds of solutions, and, you know, I was thinking, you know, there are so many out-of-the-box solutions sort of being kicked around today. There's a lot of people, and it's all about thinking out of the box, thinking out of the box. And we hear again and again, all we really have to do is think out of the box. And while that's true, we really need to start acting out of the box. And I think one of the challenges is that, you know, you, myself, as well as any citizen of the globe out there, needs to begin acting themselves. I mean, saving the world is not a participant. It's not an observational sport. It's a participant sport. And we need to put pressure on our government as well as on our local businesses or our national businesses to say that, you know, change needs to be made. And we need you to get on board with this. In the instance of what happened with the auto bailout, you know, it's not as transparent as we would have liked, and perhaps there's not as much voice from, you know, individuals who would have us act out of the box. But hopefully that will change with the Obama administration, hence my sort of indirect plea to them to listen to some of what I've got to say, as well as some other individuals who know far more than I do about these things, to incorporate them in plans moving forward. Because this is a real golden opportunity to make change. There's a lot of things that seem to be going wrong, but we can handle those with thinking about the things that we can do that will make them go right.
Well, and I think you certainly nailed it today, and I think maybe the most frustrating thing about being an environmentalist is having all these fantastic ideas and having all these golden opportunities and the frustration of having no one who's actually implementing them. So, you know, let's keep being that squeaky wheel.
Absolutely.
One of these days we'll get oiled.
Absolutely.
So thank you so much for joining us today. And do you want to give us the Earthwatch Institute website so that people can go and learn a little bit more about what you do officially?
I would love to. It's simply www.earthwatch.org. Earthwatch is all one word. And we are interested in hearing from anyone. You know, we run opportunities for people to think differently about their world, to understand how they're interconnected and interdependent upon each other and in the environment, and to think, you know, differently and creatively about how they use natural resources and how they can participate either in their local community or globally to not only learn about science and culture and the ways that we treat the planet, but ways that they can change it.
Fantastic. And anyone looking to read the full story on Alan Fortescue on Tree Hugger is welcome to go check it out. It's a great article. Alan, thank you so much for joining us this week. And hopefully next week we will be back with Byron. With Byron. That's all I want. I want him back. So thanks, everybody, for joining us. And we'll be back next week.
Thank you. Bye.
Hey, this is Danny Sullivan from the Daily Searchcast. You know, we love bringing you the news every day, and that's made possible by the sponsorship of BruceClay.com. They've just made Inc. Magazine's list of the fastest growing private businesses. They've exhibited and sponsored at my conferences from the very beginning. Bruce has got that long-standing search engine relationship chart, had been out there with the code of ethics, been a search engine expert in the field for ages. But did you know that Bruce Clay can do more than help you with just SEO? They can do PPC, web analytics, web design, marketing strategy, promotion, and branding. Everything you need for success in the online marketplace, you can check it out from the professionals at Bruce Clay Incorporated. For over 10 years, offices worldwide, they've got answers you need. Check them out today at BruceClay.com.
Bruce Clay Incorporated.
Now that you've taken WebmasterRadio.fm out for a test drive, you obviously want more, and membership definitely has its privileges. Become a WebmasterRadio.fm elite member and cruise our world of options. Forget power steering, how about power search? Imagine browsing through thousands of transcripts and then choosing only the shows you want to hear. And with unlimited access to our podcasts on demand and commercial free, power search is an option you can't live without.
And you never have to change the fluid.
Even better, with WebmasterRadio.fm, you'll never need a warranty. With over 3 years of content that's quality assured and rigorously inspected, our content will never let you down. For less than 99 cents a day, you can join our members who have found that the knowledge gained from webmasterradio.fm is worth far more than the membership fee.
My $30 a month investment has helped me make thousands.
With so many important people and so much great information coming out of the trade shows, I don't have enough time to take it all in. That's what's great about Webmaster Radio. I never miss a thing.
Off the record, webmasterradio.fm has been attributed with making its members millions of dollars, scoring them attractive significant others, and increasing quality of life overall. Sign up today as a webmasterradio.fm elite member and fill your tank with content. webmasterradio.fm, we're everywhere. Now that you've taken webmasterradio.fm out for a test drive, you obviously want more, and membership definitely has its privileges. Become a webmasterradio.fm elite member and cruise our world of options. Forget power steering, how about power search? Imagine browsing through thousands of transcripts and then choosing only the shows you want to hear. And with unlimited access to our podcast on demand and commercial free, power search is an option you can't live without.
And you never have to change the fluid.
Even better, with webmasterradio.fm, you'll never need a warranty. With over 3 years of content that's quality assured and rigorously inspected, our content will never let you down. For less than 99 cents a day, you can join our members who have found that the knowledge gained from webmasterradio.fm is worth far more than the membership fee.
My $30 a month investment has helped me make thousands.
With so many important people and so much great information coming out of the trade shows, I don't have enough time to take it all in. That's what's great about Webmaster Radio. I never miss a thing.
Off the record, webmasterradio.fm has been attributed with making its members millions of dollars, scoring them attractive significant others, and increasing quality of life overall. Sign up today as a webmasterradio.fm elite member and fill your tank with content. webmasterradio.fm, we're everywhere.